Hello, and welcome to the Aspiring Mormon Women podcast. I'm Drew Duncan, and for this episode, we're going to be talking to Whitney Call and Mallory Everton. Whitney and Mallory both write and act for BYU-TV's sketch comedy show Studio C. So let's go ahead and listen to that conversation. Okay, welcome, everyone, listeners. We are here with Whitney Meek and Mallory Everton. Whitney Call or Whitney Meek?
Hey.
Whitney Call Meek.
Sure.
Meek Call.
Whitney Call's your stage name. Mine is Sugar Pie Hot Pants.
Ondero.
Okay, so tell Whitney, tell me about yourself in short.
In short, I'm a writer and performer on Studio C. I studied creative writing at Brigham Young University, and I just bought a house, so
yeah.
That's my life.
House owner.
That's all the important things.
The big three.
And Steve is my husband, that's important. But that's my life.
Mallory, what about you?
My name is Mallory Everton, and I got my bachelor's in film from Brigham Young University about a year and a half ago. And since then, I've been working for BYU-TV. I'm also an actress and writer for Studio C. So I've been using my education. It's been cool.
Cool. Okay. So yeah, you said what you studied, but tell me a little bit more about your education, what you studied, and why you decided to study it.
Mm-hmm. Mine was kind of a roundabout way of doing it. I actually came to BYU intent on studying psychology and all of that aspect of things. So I ended up getting my minor in women's studies just to kind of keep going on that route because I was really interested in gender psychology. And then I think I took a creative writing class just as a fun thing to do with a professor, Carol Williams. And she really just made me see a lot of the good that books and fiction in general can do for people, and really made me feel like this was something that I could get into, and I really loved it. So I studied English and then went on to get a master's in creative writing, where I kept studying fiction and then specialized in young adult literature. So it's something that I started doing because I thought it was fun, but I keep doing it because I really think that people can get into literature in a way that not a lot of things can really do the same for. And so it's something I find important, even though it's also fun.
Neat.
Mm.
Very cool. What about you, Mallory?
I was similar to Whitney. It was kind of roundabout for me because when I came to BYU, I was kind of hellbent on... Can I say hellbent?
Yeah.
Really hell-bent on medical school. That's what I wanted to do. And I remember even my senior year in high school, I was really involved in theater and studio production. I took a lot of like broadcast journalism classes and edited a lot and learned a lot of that stuff. But I always just figured it was a fun hobby type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember somebody asking me like, so are you going to go to an art school? And I was like, no, thank you very much. I'm going to help people with my education.
I'm gonna do a real thing.
So, but thanks for the insult, that sort of thing. And, you know, little did I know, like a year later at BYU, I would end up being a film major. But for me, I think the decision had a lot to do... Well, there are a lot of interesting things about studying film because some people think that it's kind of a waste. But for me, it was really important. I think that education gives you confidence, and I think it helps you. And so some people say you don't need a degree to be in the film world, but I really think I needed one. It's really helped me feel qualified and confident while performing my duties. But ultimately, the decision between medicine and film for me was picking something that I loved so much I couldn't help doing,
mm-hmm.
And then picking something that I thought was very useful. And ultimately, I decided that picking something that I really loved, that I knew would keep me feeling refreshed and happy my whole life, might make me more useful in the end anyway.
Interesting. So where did you think your respective educational choices would lead you? Where did you think you would end up? What did you expect?
Oh, gosh. I don't really know.
No one really knows.
I mean, I guess I thought going into it that maybe I'd come out of it being able to teach high school creative writing. That was actually a big choice of why I went into creative writing in the first place. My high school teacher, Ms. Henson at the time, was just someone who really encouraged us to look outside ourselves and to use our way of expressing ourselves to help people and to bring attention to things that people weren't paying attention to. And so that was her big goal in our high school creative writing class. And so I kind of wanted to be that same like mentor who helped people who were lost in the world and helped teenagers really find themselves. I really wanted to get into high school education. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side of that, I thought it would also be awesome if I could write books and be someone that people, used in their creative writing classrooms to show that...
Inspire teens all
exactly,
over the world.
Exactly. That I could write, you know, maybe not J.K. Rowling. I didn't ever think I would get, you know, to that place ever, but I felt like, you know, maybe I could help teenagers in any way I could. So that's where I thought I was going to go. Mm-hmm. Who knows if I'll ever get to any of those places still. I mean, it's the night is young in my life.
You're young.
Yeah.
What about you, Mallory?
When I joined the film program, I think I pictured this future for myself, that I was going to go out and enter the industry and then become really, really good at mm-hmm. what I did. And then I'd let it be like this Easter egg that I was Mormon. Yeah. And then it would be like this thing. So I'd be like this champion. By the way, I'm Mormon.
Oh!
Just like, I just figured that's kind of what I felt like I thought that was going to be like my calling. That I would be like that girl that everybody really liked on set. And they'd be like, but why? And I'd be like, because I'm Mormon. I just kind of figured that if I worked really hard to become... as proficient in my field as I could, that would be the function.
Yeah.
That would be how I would serve a purpose. But I'm not doing that yet. Currently, mm-hmm. I'm more like a Mormon poster child for children. But I don't know. Like what you said, the night is young. I don't know what's going to happen. But I have enjoyed even like the strange curves in the path so far. So. As long as I'm happy, I guess.
Yeah, just so you talk about where you thought you would be. So where are you? Where did it lead you? Mm-hmm. Tell us about your jobs.
We work on Studio C, which, I don't know. I guess when I think about telling all of the people in my grad program, like, yeah, I wanted to write literature, and I write 5-minute sketches now. I guess initially I would have thought that that'd be something embarrassing, but it's interesting because we started the show while I was still studying in my graduate program, and I'd have to leave class a lot of times when we'd have to film things, and my professors were always really understanding. They were actually really excited about it because they were like, "No, you're actually using your education for your job," and so. Now, I'm just, I'm kind of rocking it. I feel like we're doing something with it. And not everyone can say that, especially in the arts. I feel like not a lot of people can say they're using their degree to do something artistic. And so, maybe people disagree with me and think that comedy isn't art. But it is something that I get to use to express myself, and I get to write and keep writing, and I get paid for it. So I really think it's a win-win-win right now.
Yeah. I feel similarly because I think I just, especially the first year doing Studio C, it's kind of interesting because Studio C came out of not even our degrees, but mm-hmm. we were in a sketch comedy group called Divine Comedy. Mm-hmm. And it was a class. It was like a sketch comedy class that you take for fun. You audition and
extracurricular.
Like hundreds of people would audition every year. So it was this really competitive thing at BYU. And it was exciting to be a part of. And ultimately I got involved because Whitney tried out when I was a freshman. And I was like, this just looks so fun. I was their videographer for mm-hmm. a year. So I used my video skills. It ultimately, like, almost every job that I got after I got into Divine Comedy came from Divine Comedy and not my my experience in the film program. Like, I got several acting jobs from it, like for small commercials and things like that, but I got a job with the university communications department because they thought I knew the secret formula to making viral videos for some reason. And then I got this job on Studio C, and so it's interesting. I feel like I was rewarded for just exercising my hobbies. But I also really struggled with feeling like it was not the highest use of my degree, and like, you know, I've always wanted to write for like long form stories, mm-hmm. either screenplays or
TV,
and I'm sort of kind of doing that, and I spent a long time kind of in denial about it, I guess, just saying like, well, I'm too good for this, I can't believe I'm doing this, but I ultimately feel like I've just learned that I'm grateful to hone my muscles mm-hmm. however I can. Mm-hmm. Because I think we're learning a lot, and we're very limited at BYU TV. Like, their standards are very strict. There mm-hmm. are a lot of topics that we can't talk about. There mm-hmm. are a lot of words we can't say. And so I feel like we have to get so much more creative, and it's been kind of a blessing. It really is like a writer's boot camp in a lot of ways.
And especially because we do 2 seasons a year. And so, I mean, almost
pretty... Your time is full.
It's a lot
of material.
Our time
is full. Yeah. And so even though we've only been doing it for 2 years, it's been 5 seasons. As far as content, we're producing just as much as a show that might be on for 5 years. And so in that sense, I mean, I feel like we're really just, we're trying to keep it fresh even after 5 seasons. And so it's a blessing to be able to do something for so long and still be fresh.
I think consistency is a blessing. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt mm-hmm. very strongly, like, that I felt very blessed by the fact that I've been required to write a couple sketches a week, because writing isn't easy.
And
like,
sometimes when you don't have a deadline, or you don't have mm-hmm.
it's hard to motivate yourself.
Assignment or something, it's hard to be like, I'm going to sit down and write today.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're both involved in less than practical majors, some would say.
Yes.
Yes.
And
definitely.
But it panned out, you're both working at least tangentially
mm-hmm.
in things that are related to what you studied.
And we didn't have a gap in between.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't
look
for the job. We had it while we were in school.
Which is unusual, especially for people in their 20s.
Oh, yeah, especially these days. I mean, I feel like most people, especially in artistic endeavors, but even just people who want to become doctors or scientists or... you know, teachers even have these gaps where we're trying to figure out where we fit in society.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So you touched on this. You guys write and perform comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy by its nature isn't super polite. It's kind of part of its charm, part of why it exists. But who you work for and who your audience is makes it so you have to be a little... polite, would you say?
Yes.
So often we have to tone back our humor because it's too mean.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, for example...
or
this
something
is,
inappropriate.
Yeah, this is a good example. So I wrote a sketch just, I think, 2 weeks ago that's about 2 people who are, like, health fitness professionals who just rip apart the body. Like, they're making fun of things like...
kinkles.
Terms like kinkles and love handles and stuff like that, but they invent all these really exaggerated ones.
Right.
I can't remember all of them, but I remember a giant booty was called a beanbag booty because your booty is its own beanbag chair.
It's its own chair.
Anyway, so terms like that. Anyway, and
it's clearly absurd.
It's a very absurd piece.
Right.
But because that we always have to be on the lookout for making sure that people don't misconstrue our meanings, especially children. They don't,
right,
like,
cause
I don't,
that's a big part of your audience.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And it's not like we can really think, I'm going to write a sketch for a child.
Yeah.
But we can say, how can we make this a little bit more palatable for a child? So I've added a straight character to the sketch. So that just means that somebody who's there to be like, what are you guys saying?
Yeah.
How are you? And it doesn't really take too much away from the humor, I don't think, but it allows there to be like a moral center to the sketch.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would have honestly preferred to leave it without, because
right.
I like the absurdity of 2 people going on for that long. But
we have so many people who might be molded by that kind of view.
Right.
Not like
weird people aren't like
we're not molded.
Studio C
as
their moral
standard.
You
never know what a kid is watching.
But yeah, you know, someone might look at that and not get the irony,
yeah.
and then take it the wrong way. So we always do have to, I mean, we don't do that with every sketch, obviously. Right. We let some things just go over people's heads if they don't get it. But that, I think, especially because it's such a sensitive issue for lots of people and it can become something unhealthy, I think we had to keep an eye out for.
Body issues.
Body issues, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a sensitive thing.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, we have to definitely keep in mind. I mean, we can't make fart jokes. We can't make bathroom humor, which, I mean, in the big scheme of things, we don't really want to use a, you know, potty humor joke if we don't have to, because typically it means that you haven't been able to think of anything else. But sometimes you want to make a fart joke. It's just really funny. Yeah. Sometimes it's human nature.
I would argue that we've written a few more sophisticated fart sketches.
It's true.
Which sounds oxymoronic, but
we used real classy stuff.
No, we don't.
Stuff,
you know? Torture toots.
Use torture toots?
No, we never use torture toots.
Oh,
torture toots. I thought it was one of the better sketches I wrote that summer.
It was really great.
But it's a sketch about this guy who's torturing another guy, and the guy who's being tortured keeps just farting uncontrollably during the torture.
And we never mentioned farting. I never used the word fart
or pass gas or any of the euphemisms. Mm-hmm. It was always just like, what is that?
And the guy torturing him starts becoming tortured by the smell.
So they switch places, and mm-hmm. the guy with the powers, the guy with the gas. Anyway, I was really proud of it. But we did perform it, but our director of content was like, okay, I'd be okay with the sketch if you just include the beginning and the end and cut the whole middle. I was like, it won't make sense. Yeah. So, okay, thank you anyway. I'm glad we tried it.
So you kind of have to watch what you do. Is that, I'm sure that's difficult or that's mm-hmm. disappointing. Is it more disappointing or are you happy that you have to do it?
I think overall we're happy we have to do it. I mean, obviously there's moments when we're going through things.
I wish I could make that joke.
Exactly. Or where it's like, seriously, we can't even do this. I mean, like, we can't even have a character holding a cigar on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, things like that where, you know, if you're doing a 20s sketch and you want an Al Capone kind of character, you want to really paint the image, but we can't always do things like that. And so some things we get a little frustrated with. But overall, I would rather be in an environment where I don't have to worry, like, about anything we do, rather than like pick and choose, like, oh, you know, I'm letting people know. I didn't write that sketch. I wrote, you know, these ones that, I don't know. I feel like if we worked for anywhere else, you'd be in a situation where you kind of have to choose your own stance, and then if anyone else is not choosing that moral stance, you just be okay with the fact that you're presenting some things from your company that you're not comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this might not make me sound very sophisticated, but right now, at least in my life, I'm grateful for somebody to tell me what I can and cannot do
mm-hmm.
at the moment, because I think it would be hard to kind of try to decide that for myself. Like, okay, I want to do these fart sketches and these two sex jokes. Is it too far? I don't really know. But I'm the one deciding. I'm the one responsible. It's actually kind of nice to
mm-hmm.
have BYU TV just kind of be the bad guy.
They're
the bad cop.
It doesn't mean
that I'm constantly, biting the hand that feeds, but I feel like it is nice right now to feel not responsible for the standards of the material. Even if I write something that's semi-inappropriate, I still don't feel like it's my fault. If someone
mm-hmm.
gets offended, I feel like it's, well, it passed through several eyes.
They let us do it,
and so it's their decision. So I'm grateful currently to not be responsible for
that.
It's
interesting.
Hopefully I can work up to that kind of responsibility and understand that a little more, but...
Well, and I feel like a company that, like, isn't, like, that doesn't have any line at all, I don't know, I feel like SNL... I mean, they won't touch, like, really bad things like...
The Holocaust?
Like, the Holocaust.
Dark stuff.
Yeah, really dark stuff. But, like, they'll have jokes, you know, they'll have sketches. What was that one? It was just, like, all about poop.
Well,
like, someone dressed up like
poop.
Jared
Carden, I remember him saying something about that when we were filming our capture. He was
yeah.
like, well, good job on your show tonight, guys. Last night I watched SNL and somebody was wearing a poop suit. They were a giant poop.
And, like, you know, it's silly and things like that, but I feel like if you don't have any sort of line, then, like, when writers get writer's block and when we get bored, then...
Poop suit.
Things like that where it's
genius.
Just, like,
Perfect.
It just becomes, like, really not great work, and it's because no one's holding you accountable to make something better if you can't come up with anything. So I'm grateful that, like, sometimes we just have to, come up with something just as good or better that doesn't involve that. And I think it keeps us on our A game.
Like I said, I think ultimately I'm grateful to not have to make that choice. And I've realized more that I respect myself a little bit more when I think about myself as an employee and I'm trying to deliver a good product mm-hmm. for my client. Mm-hmm. So my client doesn't want any material that's offensive to a Mormon audience, mm-hmm. to a Mormon family audience. So that's very, very soft, I guess. Maybe soft isn't the right word, but definitely not edgy comedy mm-hmm. most of the time. It makes me realize, I want to be that transient. I want to be able to adapt to different conditions like that.
Because that's likely what you're going to have to do
absolutely.
The rest exactly. of your career.
When am I
career?
Not going to be, like, catering to somebody's...
You're always working for somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. So, Mallory, you mentioned earlier being a Mormon poster child.
Mm-hmm.
There were some unexpected things that happened because of your current jobs.
Yeah.
What... Talk about that.
I don't know, I guess now it's become something that, because we're on BYU TV, because we're the only comedic thing on BYU TV,
possibly the only entertaining thing. I love our friends at BYU TV, but they're still working up to being a station that
right.
its
they're
main
working
goal
for
is
content.
Entertainment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it's definitely a new thing, but because we're the only thing right now, a lot of Mormon families tune in to us because it's the only thing they can trust their kids to watch on TV. And so it becomes something where, we become more relatable to everyone because we're Mormon. But I think it also then puts us in a box that, I don't know, I'm just worried someday that, like, something that I'm going to do something, Kirby Hayborn does
right.
a beer commercial and,
goes,
and is
yeah.
shunned.
Yeah.
My books that I've written, I wrote a thesis and it has swear words in it. I want to publish it.
Your characters are not Mormon.
Because my characters aren't Mormon. And I personally am comfortable with that sort of language as long as it's true to characters. I feel like that's an artistic decision that I've made for myself and I'm comfortable with. And I still feel the spirit. I can still go to the temple. I still feel good about my standing in the church, but I write swear words.
Right.
And so I'm
and what
worried.
If some child says, oh,
I'm worried if
book?
It ever gets published.
Yeah.
Yeah, that if any Studio C fans say, hey, someone on Studio C wrote a book, I want to go and read it because that person wrote it. I'm so worried if that ever happens that they're going to immediately think, like, oh, this is the kind of people on Studio C, and immediately think that
my
I'm...
life was a lie.
Yeah. It is a little weird. It's a little worrisome.
It's hard because I think we might be hypersensitive about that. Like we have this kind of complex about it because we get very, very interesting comments on our Facebook page sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, Whitney wore this little unitard thing for an outfit for Tooth Fairy.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got these thick, probably 2-inch straps mm-hmm. and then big, poofy, kind of translucent,
sparkly
sleeves mm-hmm. that go down to, like, her mid-bicep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But they're translucent, kind
yeah.
of. Like,
a little sheer.
They're slightly sheer.
Yeah.
And, granted, it was one comment, and it's important to remember that
everyone's,
that's not representative.
Yeah,
there was a comment, yeah.
They were like, hey, I could see shoulders. I mean, this is a Mormon show, let's be
frankly,
honest.
I'm a little disappointed.
Oh.
And it was like, that verbiage is just so very judgmental.
And, I just feel like this is something... This is a soapbox moment here, but I'm going to take it. I just feel like in our culture, we need to love each other. And,
yes.
And I'm not going to go on this tangent too long, but I remember, when Mitt Romney was running for president, there were blogs where people were discussing Ann Romney's wardrobe. And they were like, well, that doesn't look like something she could wear garments with.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember, one of our friends, James's wife on the show, she grew up Catholic. But she converted, but her whole family is still Catholic. And her sister sent her one of those links, and she was like, I would think your guys' religion, everyone would be a little nicer to each other.
Mm,
and that was something that really hit me, because, they're not part of our religion, but they can see how some people treat each other. And we do. We have a standard to live by that isn't necessarily the same as the world's standard, and so we really do try to abide by some stricter rules. But I think, we gotta remember what it means to be Christian.
Well,
so.
Accepting and open-minded are not words that I would describe like the Mormon community at large, and right. I hope that that changes.
And not to say, you know, I mean,
that there aren't accepting and open-minded right. people, but...
And not to say, like, you know, if I were to go and do some horrible acts and then just say, accept me for who I am, you know, but there's things that I think are really personal matters that you want to know that, like, you know, this is between my family and me and God.
You don't want some guy on Facebook saying, hey,
exactly.
I don't approve.
Exactly. So having those kinds of comments sometimes has been...
Especially about the wardrobe thing. It's made me feel very uncomfortable.
Natalie wore a low... It wasn't really that low at all.
Vintage
it was a
dress
V-neck.
For a 1930s sketch.
IG. Yeah, mm-hmm. And so just the way the picture was taken, there was like some shadow over the neckline. And someone said, my brothers watch this show, so if you could please keep the modesty...
Keep your bodies to yourself.
Yeah, keep your bodies to yourselves, essentially. But it was one of those things where it's like...
Your brother's probably going to encounter women who are dressed more scantily clad than that.
More... already.
Yes, has he ever been to the beach before?
Mm. I mean, obviously, internet comments are not where I should be getting my sense of self-worth. But when people do make those kinds of comments, it just makes me wonder, like, what are you going to think if you know that I, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, write swear words or that I drink caffeine or that I don't know.
And you don't always want to... In your lives, you don't always want to produce content that would be okay for all children to see, necessarily.
It would be fun to do some adult content.
Because, you know, you're adults and you want to do things that aren't for kids.
Yeah, and adult doesn't mean XXX.
No, it just means that you wouldn't let a child watch it.
Exactly. Kind of getting back to the root of your question. So, like, I think the most interesting thing about the popularity of Studio C has been the like just natural inclination that people have to dehumanize you when they see you in a certain way like that. I mean, I think that's ultimately what it comes down to here. It's like they're forgetting that we're humans, that we're like girls from Portland who go to church every week and go to the temple, and you know, and so they feel like they can make comments like that. And also they're probably 12. I try to remind myself
I don't
that
know
a lot
if
of
I've had some 40-year-old women make comments towards me
and their children or weird old people,
12-year-olds. I mean, but it's really strange how cruel people can be. And so
they'll
that's one reason why comments
image.
I think affect us.
They'll make comments about like how you look a lot thinner in real life or how you look so much cuter in real life than in the show.
Oh, thank you.
Or they'll talk about like you're
Matt's
my favorite
funny, but no one else is.
Mm. Or you know, they'll actually just go down the line and say Matt's my favorite.
You're good.
Mallory's
you're
really good. Great. Jason I like. Whitney, I'm still figuring out.
That's
I don't
like
know.
Word for word something that happened at the signing last week.
Like, I know.
The four of us were at the table, and she was like, really like Matt. Mallory's okay. Jason, Whitney, I don't know.
Like, we're right here.
It's like, well, I'm a flesh and blood human being.
We're
I don't know
not,
why you would
this
feel.
This is a cardboard cutout of us right now. Yeah. Here. Do you feel a little objectified, I guess?
Yeah. Well, and you know. It's fun to take a few pictures with people every once in a while, but sometimes it's a little strange when you get stopped multiple times while trying to pick up your groceries. We just happen to kind of live in, like, the epicenter of our
it's a little distorted.
Fan base. Yeah. And so it feels like we're Ryan Gosling, but we're not. Right. We're nowhere near, and thank goodness, but, like, for now it kind of feels that way sometimes. Like, it doesn't feel... I feel a little unsafe sometimes. I feel like people... would be watching me more closely. Mm-hmm. Like, I just random things like that. Because every once in a while, like, Matt was in the waiting room at some DMV situation. Or I can't remember what it was. I think it was a car repair place. And he was waiting for his car to be fixed.
Is it, yeah, Jiffy Lube.
Jiffy Lube. And there were, like, three or four other people in the waiting. Maybe it was five or six, actually. There were other people in there with him. And one of them, after, like, 10 minutes, was like, are you on Studio C? And he was like, yes. And then all of the people in the room responded and started talking to him. So even in a room full of five or six other people that are not talking to you, they still might know who you are. So let's say that you misbehave.
Right.
Or let's say that, you know, you are having a bad day that day, or you look like a homeless person because
you didn't
of
shower
such and
in
such.
3 days or something.
Yeah, and it's just, it's an uncomfortable thing to feel like people are like, I know that person, and I'll probably go home and share this anecdote.
And any bad moment you might have, you say, oh, she's... jerk. Yeah. Because she did that thing.
I mean, you always, like, you grow up having those stories of, like, people watch you. Like, people really are paying attention. And, you know, as a Mormon, you have, like, those stories growing up.
Right. But you guys are, you guys are playing that out.
It's a little heightened.
It's a little heightened, yeah. But, you know, I mean, sometimes it makes me, like, really do take stock in how I present myself to people in public. Like, you know, am I someone that I would be proud to be when people are paying attention to me? Other times, though, you're just having a crappy day, and it's like...
Sometimes you're in a bad mood.
Yeah. Or you're at the water park, and you don't want someone to take a picture of you.
Without asking you. They took a video of me.
Coming down the slide.
Suit. I was like, oh, I don't even really like taking pictures myself of me in a swimsuit.
You're taking a secret video. Gross.
Yeah, we went to a JCAA, especially when we travel in packs, which we tend to do because we're all really close. It tends to get a little worse, but we went to JCAA's the other day, and we got some shakes, and there were a lot of families there because mm-hmm. it was dinner hour, and it was a madhouse.
Yeah.
Like, we took several pictures, like, we just kind of, they kind of formed, like, a little bit of a line, and we took three or four pictures, and then while we sat there, we just had, like, kids walking by and looking at us, and people would, there was, like, this... there's like this 4-foot partition between like one mm-hmm. area of seating and the other, and people would lean over it. You'd just see like eyes on the top of a head, and then you'd see a phone pop up. Happened like, I don't know, 3 or 4 times.
That's funny.
It's funny, but it also is just
bizarre.
It's a little isolating, I would mm-hmm. say. It makes you feel a little bit separated.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like, you need to be on your best behavior, which I guess is a good motivator to behave well.
Mm-hmm. Let's switch gears. Most would say that TV, which you guys work in, you work in TV, is a male-dominated field, a male-dominated workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys observed that? Have you noticed anything related to that?
Well, I mean, even our cast is lopsided. There are mm-hmm. 3 girls and 7 guys. But if we had funnier girls around that, like, had auditioned, then we would have more girls, that's for sure. That's more about just the people who were at our disposal. I guess our crew is probably, I don't know, 90% male.
But then you also, most of the crew is people who are lifting and doing lots of grunt work, which I think guys are usually more...
Favors men anyway.
Exactly. Maybe, yeah. I don't know. I wonder if it's just a personality kind of thing. Because, you know, you have more doctors that are male and more nurses that are female, generally speaking. But, like, I don't know too many women in the nursing program that I've been friends with who have that mindset of, like, yeah, I want to go through 3 more years of medical school. I want to be aggressive. I want to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know if it's, especially, I mean, not in our network. I don't really sense that people are oppressive or anything like that. I wonder if it's just the mindset of, like, who wants to be, you know, a producer, who wants to be in this kind of business. And most of the time, I think men are more drawn to it. But if we had more women around that were, you know, in that mindset, I don't know that it would be quashed.
I think you're right. There might be a certain amount of personality differences going on. I think that, well, I've experienced a fair amount of, like, there have been a few times where, especially when I've directed, because mm-hmm. I really like directing, so I've tried to take the opportunities that I can, and when I've directed, it's usually for, like, a full male crew.
Right.
And they've often been older than me, too. So I'm 24, but I've been directing through...
So a lot of people are older than you.
A lot of people are older than me currently. I'll change that. Like, I worked on a commercial a year ago for my brother-in-law, and my DP, the director of photography, I just felt like he didn't really listen to me a ton.
Respect you, maybe
he didn't think I knew what I was doing exactly, but I had written the scripts, and I've directed comedy before, and they were supposed to be, like, these short comedic bursts. And so I was confident, and I knew that he should be listening to me, but I did feel a little bit like, and I hate to pull, it's almost like pulling a race card. It's mm-hmm. like,
Is it because I'm a woman?
Yeah. But I wasn't sure, and I was thinking it could be because I'm younger, it could be because maybe I don't come off as the most confident person, and I've been trying to work on that because of it. I remember one distinct experience where we were walking in, I can't remember, it was in like one of the edit bays in BYU TV, and we went in. There was a tech guy who was explaining, and it's possible that he's just a condescending person,
right?
But he was explaining some things to us, and so he turns to me and he's like, "So the deal with H.264 codecs is blah, 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 blah. And what a codec is." And I was like, "You don't need to tell me what a codec is. I went to film school and I'm an editor. So if you could just please." I did not handle myself super well, I'll be perfectly honest. I don't think I was like openly aggressive, but I think you could tell I was a little bit like, don't feel like you need to explain everything to little old Mal just because I'm a woman. And it seems like I wouldn't know anything about it, but a lot of that could also be the fact that I'm an actress on the show, so people don't assume that I have any ability when it comes to the technical aspects of the job. So I guess a lot of it is just presenting myself with confidence and hoping that other women are willing to do that as well. Mm-hmm. Because I know that, I think I know a lot of women who'd be very good directors and have really great creative visions, but there are just not very many female directors out there.
Right.
And
well, it does take a certain aggression.
It does.
A certain confidence, like what Whitney was saying, willingness to kind of put other people out.
A little bit.
That I think.
Because, yeah, like, in the writer's room, I mean, there's four of us that are mainly there all the time, and it's half and half, you know? And so I feel like in the writer's room, when it's something like that...
Two and two.
You know, it's very equal. There's women who want to write, and there's men who want to write. Maybe directing is a whole different ballgame because of the type.
It's like a boss leadership role.
Right.
And so it's a little less common to find women in that position. There are a lot of female producers.
True.
So there are definitely
a lot
women
of female
who,
editors.
Yeah, a lot of female editors. In fact, I hear that women make better editors than men,
That's
just naturally.
What they say.
Detail-oriented.
My professor said it was because women are good at sewing. And I remember being like, "Oh, that's the most offensive thing I've ever heard." But then I realized, oh, it's because it's similar to sewing.
Right.
And if you're good at sewing because of the natural disposition of your brain, then you'd probably also be good at editing. Mm-hmm. Still.
And because they're good in the kitchen.
Just because I'm a woman.
So do you guys feel pretty stable in your current jobs?
Well, that's funny then. You would laugh so hard, but I guess it's true. We probably don't.
It's a worry of ours. It's just one of those things that we talk about a lot because we really don't know where we're going to be in a year.
Sure.
And we also don't know how many opportunities are really going to be. Like,
right. It's not a super reliable field to be
in. Yeah.
Right.
Well, and a family sketch comedy show, is that a launch pad for a lot of things or no things? Mm-hmm. We really don't know.
Yeah.
And then there's this constant looming fear that we'll put one toe out of line and a general authority will, like, bring the smack down and we'll all get fired and excommunicated. But
it's one of those things where when we look at the big picture, I mean, we feel like we could be here for as long as we wanted. So as far as that instability, you know, as far as speaking of stability goes, I think that we feel stable in the sense that we could be working for as long as we want, doing what we're doing, whether it's with sketch comedy or if we wanted to write a comedic sitcom.
For BYU TV.
For BYU TV. Because
we're currently full-time employees there.
Yeah. Or even if we wanted to do a full-length movie with BYU TV. Right now, I think we're at the point where they're behind our... They've got our backs. And they really just want to keep us on to do what we can do and help them transform their network. As far as in general, I think that's where we have no idea if we ever going to do anything else.
Yeah.
So it's something we talk about a lot.
Yeah, in the immediate future, I think we'll have jobs, like Whitney said, for as long as we want to. We're kind of a bargain for BYU TV because they got us fresh out of college, and so none of us are gilded. Like, we're not in the Writers Guild or the Screen Actors Guild, and... but so I think that they really are getting much more than their money's worth out of us. So I do think we'll have jobs for a while. It's just a matter of how long we want to do them. And then from there, just hoping that, I don't know, our experience will be good for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we all have our plan B as if, like, you know, this crashes and burns. I mean, I don't know. I'm always going, you know, looking at if I need to become a teacher somewhere or something like that. But we're hoping, I think, that we can keep doing what we're doing. It just depends where.
Well, thank you, Whitney and Mallory, for joining us. Cheers. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.